The Dialogue of St. Catherine of Siena, Part 29. A Treatise of Obedience. Here begins the Treatise of Obedience, and first, of where obedience may be found, and what it is that destroys it, and what is the sign of a man's possessing it, and what accompanies and nourishes obedience. The Supreme and Eternal Father, kindly turning the eye of his mercy and clemency towards her, replied, "Your holy desire and righteous request, O dearest daughter, have a right to be heard, and inasmuch as I am the supreme truth, I will keep my word, fulfilling the promise which I made to you, and satisfying your desire. And if you ask me where obedience is to be found, and what is the cause of its loss, and the sign of its possession, I reply that you will find it in its completeness in the sweet and amorous word, my only begotten Son." So prompt in him was this virtue, that in order to fulfill it, he hastened to the shameful death of the cross. What destroys obedience? Look at the first man, and you will see the cause which destroyed the obedience imposed on him by me, the Eternal Father. It was pride, which was produced by self-love and desire to please his companion. This was the cause that deprived him of the perfection of obedience, giving him instead disobedience, depriving him of the life of grace, and slaying his innocence. Wherefore he fell into impurity and great misery, and not only he, but the whole human race, as I said to you. The sign that you have this virtue is patience, and impatience the sign that you have it not. And you will find that this is indeed so when I speak to you further concerning this virtue. But observe that obedience may be kept in two ways, of which one is more perfect than the other. Not that they are on that account separated, but united, as I explained to you of the precepts and counsels. The one way is the most perfect. The other is also good and perfect, for no one at all can reach eternal life if he be not obedient, for the door was unlocked by the key of obedience, which had been fastened by the disobedience of Adam. I, then, being constrained by my infinite goodness, since I saw that man whom I so much loved, did not return to me his end, I took the keys of obedience and placed them in the hands of my sweet and amorous word, the truth, and he, becoming the porter of that door, opened it. And no one can enter except by means of that door and that porter. Wherefore he said in the Holy Gospel that no one could come to me, the Father, if not by him. When he returned to me, rising to heaven from the conversation of men at the ascension, he left you this sweet key of obedience. For, as you know, he left his vicar, the Christ, on earth, whom you are all obliged to obey until death. And whoever is outside his obedience is in a state of damnation, as I have already told you in another place. Now, I wish you to see and know this most excellent virtue in that humble and immaculate lamb, and the source whence it proceeds. What caused the great obedience of the word? The love which he had for my honor and your salvation. Whence proceeded this love? From the clear vision with which his soul saw the divine essence and the eternal Trinity, thus always looking on me, the eternal God. His fidelity obtained this vision most perfectly for him, which vision you imperfectly enjoy by the light of holy faith. He was faithful to me, his eternal Father, and therefore hastened as one enamored along the road of obedience, lit up with the light of glory. And, inasmuch as love cannot be alone, but is accompanied by all the true and royal virtues, because all the virtues draw their life from love, he possessed them all, but in a different way from that in which you do. Among the others, he possessed patience, which is the marrow of obedience, and a demonstrative sign whether a soul be in a state of grace and truly love, or not. Wherefore charity, the mother of patience, has given her as a sister to obedience, and so closely united them together that one cannot be lost without the other. Either you have them both, or you have neither. This virtue has a nurse who feeds her, that is, true humility. Therefore a soul is obedient in proportion to her humility, and humble in proportion to her obedience. This humility is the foster mother and nurse of charity, and with the same milk she feeds the virtue of obedience. Her raiment given her by this nurse is self-contempt and insult, desire to displease herself and to please me. Where does she find this? In sweet Christ Jesus, my only begotten Son. For who abased himself more than he did? He was sated with insults, jibes, and mockings. He caused pain to himself in his bodily life in order to please me. And who was more patient than he? For his cry was never heard in murmuring, but he patiently embraced his injuries like one enamored, fulfilling the obedience imposed on him by me, his eternal Father. Wherefore, in him you will find obedience perfectly accomplished. He left you this rule and this doctrine, which gives you life, for it is the straight way, having first observed them himself. He is the way. Wherefore he said, he is the way, the truth, and the life. For he who travels by that way travels in the light, and being enlightened cannot stumble or be caused to fall without perceiving it. For he has cast from himself the darkness of self-love, by which Adam fell into disobedience. For as I spoke to you of a companion virtue proceeding from obedience and humility, so I tell you that disobedience comes from pride, which issues from self-love, depriving the soul of humility. The sister given by self-love to obedience is impatience, and pride, her foster mother, feeds her with the darkness of infidelity. So she hastens along the way of darkness, which leads her to eternal death. All this you should read in that glorious book, where you find described this and every other virtue. How obedience is the key with which heaven is opened, and how the soul should fasten it by means of a cord to her girdle, and of the excellences of obedience. Now that I have shown you where obedience is to be found, and whence she comes, and who is her companion, and who her foster mother, I will continue to speak of the obedient and of the disobedient together, and of obedience in general, which is the obedience of the precepts, and in particular, which is that of the counsels. The whole of your faith is founded upon obedience, for by it you prove your fidelity. You are all in general, by my truth, to obey the commandments of the law, the chief of which is to love me above everything, and your neighbor as yourself. And the commandments are so bound up together that you cannot observe or transgress one without observing or transgressing all. He who observes this principal commandment observes all the others. He is faithful to me and his neighbor, for he loves me and my creature, and is therefore obedient, becoming subject to the commandments of the law and to creatures for my sake. And with humble patience he endures every labor, and even his neighbor's detraction of him. This obedience is of such excellence that you all derive grace from it, just as from disobedience you all derive death. Wherefore it is not enough that it should be only in word and not practiced by you. I have already told you that this word is the key which opens heaven, which key my Son placed in the hands of his vicar. This vicar placed it in the hands of everyone who receives holy baptism, promising therein to renounce the world and all its pomps and delights, and to obey, so that each man has in his own person that very same key which the Word had. And if a man does not unlock in the light of faith and with the hand of love, the gate of heaven, by means of this key, he never will enter there, in spite of its having been opened by the word. For though I created you without yourselves, I will not save you without yourselves. Wherefore you must take the key in your hand and walk by the doctrine of my word, and not remain seated, that is to say, placing your love in finite things, as do foolish men who follow the first man, their first father, following his example, and casting the key of obedience into the mud of impurity, breaking it with the hammer of pride, rusting it with self-love. It would have been entirely destroyed, had not my only begotten Son, the Word, come and taken this key of obedience in his hands, and purified it in the fire of divine love, having drawn it out of the mud, and cleansed it with his blood, and straightened it with the knife of justice, and hammered your iniquities into shape on the anvil of his own body. So perfectly did he repair it, that no matter how much a man may have spoiled his key by his free will, by the self-same free will assisted by my grace, he can repair it with the same instruments that were used by my word. Oh, blinder than the blind, for having spoiled the key of obedience, you do not think of mending it. Do you think, forsooth, that the disobedience which closed the door of heaven will open it? That the pride which fell can rise? Do you think to be admitted to the marriage feast in foul and disordered garments? Do you think that, sitting down and binding yourself with the chain of mortal sin, you can walk? Or that without a key you can open the door? Do not imagine that you can, for it is a fantastical delusion. You must be firm. You must leave mortal sin by a holy confession, contrition of heart, satisfaction, and purpose of amendment. Then you will throw off that hideous and defiled garment, and clothed in the shining nuptial robe, will hasten, the key of obedience in your hand, to open the door. But bind this key with the cord of self-contempt and hatred of yourself and of the world, and fasten it to the love of pleasing me, your Creator, of which you should make a girdle to yourself to bind your loins with it, for fear you lose it. No, my daughter, there are many who take up this key of obedience, having seen by the light of faith that in no other way can they escape eternal damnation. But they hold it in their hand, without wearing this girdle, or fastening the key to it with the cord of self-contempt. That is to say, that they are not perfectly clothed with my pleasure, but still seek to please themselves. They do not wear the cord of self-contempt, for they do not desire to be despised, but rather take delight in the praise of men. Such as these are apt to lose their key, for if they suffer a little extra fatigue, or mental or corporal tribulation, and if, as often happens, the hand of holy desire loosens its grasp, they will lose it. They can indeed find it again, if they wish to, while they live. But if they do not wish, they never will find it. And what will prove to them that they have lost it? Impatience. For patience was united to obedience, and their impatience proves that obedience does not dwell in their soul. Oh, how sweet and glorious is this virtue which contains all the rest! For she is conceived and born of charity. On her is founded the rock of the holy faith. She is a queen whose consort will feel no trouble, but only peace and quiet. The waves of the stormy sea cannot hurt her, nor can any tempest reach the interior of the soul in whom she dwells. Such a one feels no hatred when injured, because he wishes to obey the precept of forgiveness. He suffers not when his appetites are not satisfied, because obedience has ordered him to desire me alone, who can and will satisfy all his desires, if he strip himself of worldly riches. And so, in all things, which would be too long to relate, he who has chosen as spouse Queen Obedience, the appointed key of heaven, finds peace and quiet. Oh, blessed obedience! You voyage without fatigue, and reach without danger this port of salvation. You are conformed to my only begotten Son, the Word. You board the ship of the Holy Cross, forcing yourself to endure, so as not to transgress the obedience of the Word, nor abandon his doctrine, of which you make a table when you eat the food of souls. Dwelling in the love of your neighbor, being anointed with true humility, which saves you from coveting, contrary to my will, his possessions, you walk erect, without bending, for your heart is sincere and not false, loving generously and truly my creatures. You are a sunrise drawing after you the light of divine grace. You are a sun which makes the earth, that is to say, the organs of the soul, to germinate with the heat of charity, all of which, as well as those of the body, produce life-giving fruit for yourself and your neighbor. You are even cheerful, for your face is never wrinkled with impatience, but smooth and pleasant with the happiness of patience. And even in its fortitude, you are great by long endurance, so long that it reaches from earth to heaven and unlocks the celestial door. You are a hidden pearl trampled by the world, abasing yourself, submitting to all creatures. Yet your kingdom is so great that no one can rule you, for you have come out of the mortal servitude of your own sensuality, which destroyed your dignity, and having slain this enemy with hatred and dislike of your own pleasure, have reobtained your liberty.